else you have picked up into the burial pit, and stop collecting things until we have the whole clan back to Bright's Heaven."
"But the seeds are valuable," she protested.
"The clan will have no need for seeds to plant when they are on the move to Bright's Heaven, and there will be plenty of pods and seeds when we bring them there," he replied. She could only agree with him, and he stood by watching, first with amusement, then with amazement, as a steady flow of seeds, pebbles, worthless dragon crystal shards, and flow-slow nodes filled the burial pit. He did not know that Great Crack held back something. In each one of the food pods from Bright's Heaven, the bottom seed in the clump had an unusual 12-pointed cluster shape instead of the normal oval shape. Great Crack's curiosity had been aroused by the unusual shape, and she had looked carefully at each pod she had opened. Every pod had a cluster-shaped seed, and she was especially careful to keep each one. She wanted to plant them to see if the petal plant that grew from them would be different in shape than the ones that grew from the oval seeds. When she dumped her store of treasures, she withheld the cluster seeds.
"They are so small they won't slow me down," she said smugly to herself. "Besides, he will never notice now that I have an egg growing."
Covering up the burial pit carefully to leave no trace of its presence, she returned to join the others. After many, many turns, the hunting party began to enter familiar territory. They took no breaks now, but pushed steadily onward. As they approached the home of the clan, they felt disturbing tremors under their treads. There were loud voices booming through the crust, and much rapid movement of treads. Some of the voices were in a strange accent.
The clan was under attack.
Blue Flo moved ahead more rapidly. Thinning way down, he stopped just over the horizon from the camp. He quickly reinforced an eye stub and raised one eye up to evaluate the situation. A large war party from another clan was attacking the petal plant field. He could see movement between the rows as the war party drove the guards down the rows, so that others could strip the pods from the plants at the ends of the rows. There was another group that kept up feinting attacks on the pod bins and stockades on the other side of the camp, spreading the clan guard warriors thin. There seemed to be too few guards, and Blue Flo could not see Smoky Sky anywhere. There were no enemy warriors on their side of the field, so the plan of attack was obvious. Blue Flo dropped his eye and whispered the situation to his group.
"The petal plant fields are under attack by a large war party that has control over the eastern half. We will go east from here, staying below the horizon, cross over in the hard direction until we are in the back of them, then come down at them from the east and trap them in between."
As he spoke, pods and digging tools dropped out of pouches into a disorganized pile on the crust. Rugged fighting manipulators sprang from their bodies and pulled sharp shards of dragon crystal from their weapons pouches. Although Great Crack tried to hide them, Blue Flo saw with disgust the small pile of funny pod seeds. He resolved to give her a drubbing once the battle was over. With their killing spears of shattered dragon crystal at the ready, the hunting party moved east, going many times faster than their previous rate of movement in the hard direction. Once they had moved far enough east to be over the horizon in that direction, Blue Flo led them across in the hard direction until they were in back of the attacking party. Putting his warriors in a line, each with one or more sharp spikes sticking out from strong manipulators firmly embedded in their thickened front ends, he whispered to them all,
"They do not know we are attacking, so move as quietly as you can. If we can surprise them, we will catch them with their brain knots in our direction."
They moved ahead smoothly, keeping a low profile as they came over the horizon.
they flowed around a pile of pods that had been stacked for pickup.
Blue Flow whispered, "We're in luck. The pickers have gone down to fight and pushed the guards further back."
They each chose a row, and with their quarry busily engaged in a battle midway down the row, they were able to attack almost without warning. It was hard to kill Achilla. If hit with something hard, the fluid body just retreated from the blow with the flexible skin absorbing the impact. If the something hard was very sharp, like the shattered end of a dragon crystal, it could poke a hole through the skin. And if that was big enough a hole, some of the glowing fluid inside would leak out before the automatic protection systems could close the wound. If an eye that was so rash as to be out on a stub could be caught, a sharp-edged shard might slice off the eye stub with an accompanying shock of pain, but only a partial loss of sight. After all, if one or two of the normal complement of 12 eyes were lost, the Chila could easily adjust the position of the remainder to have nearly complete vision. The only really vulnerable part of a Chila was the brain knot. It could be anywhere inside the skin, but it was a good bet that if the Chila were fighting someone on one side, the brain knot would be well over on the other side, far away from any sharp spears of dragon crystal. Blue Flow was counting on this instinctive behavior as he rushed his enemy target from behind and flowed up under her topside. He felt the telltale knot under his tread and shocked it into unconsciousness with a focused ripple from his underside, then neatly speared it 3 times as his momentum carried him up and over his now dead foe.
"Blue Flow!" shouted Weary Tread, lowering the point of her spear. "Where did you come from?"
Blue Flow surveyed the oozing hide of his old friend and replied, "We just got back, and we have found a new home for the clan. But come, follow me. We have fighting to do." Blue Flow moved down the row of plants until he could see a sparring trio of warriors between the plants. Warmwind and Greatcrack had an enemy warrior between them. The warrior had parried Greatcrack's initial rush and was now fending them both off as he attempted to escape between the rows. In a rumble of despair, he saw the long shard in Blue Flow's grasp as Blue Flow blocked the way, sending his spear directly into the center of the enemy.
"Another brain kill," Blue Flow gloated as the foe collapsed into a spreading disc that filled the space between the plants.
He quickly whispered to Greatcrack and Warmwind, pointing with a ripple of his eye stubs,
"You two go that way, and we will go this way."
Blue Flow turned, and with Weary Tread covering his trail, went down the row to find more of the foe. With the return of the hunting party, the tide of battle turned, and soon the enemy war party had retreated, without their stolen pods, and with many of their number gone. The cleanup work began. The stolen pods were stored in the pod bin, along with the ripe pods that the hunting party had brought back with them. The many dead, among them Fuzzy Crust and Star Rise of the clan, were sliced open to let the fluid seep into the crust, and then the meat was dried and stored. The news that the clan had for the hunting party was not good. They had been under almost constant attack by hungry war parties ever since the group had left. Smoky Sky had died long ago in a battle to protect the fields, and Weary Tread was now leader of the clan. When Blue Flow heard this news, he turned and looked at Weary Tread, whose scarred hide was still oozing glowing yellow-white fluid from some serious spear wounds.
"Now is the best time to do this," Blue Flow thought. "The clan needs a strong leader for the journey to Bright's Heaven."
He turned, raised his spear, and issued the formal challenge to Weary Tread.
"Who is leader of the clan, old one?"
There was a long pause as Weary Tread evaluated her chances.
she could still be a good leader, and did not want to be relegated to the status of an old one. But never had she felt so like the dreary name she had been stuck with as a hatchling.
"You are Blue Flo," she replied,
and winced as the ceremonial slash from Blue Flo's spear added another small wound to her punctured hide. Blue Flo turned and said to them all, "I am leader of the clan. Does anyone challenge me?" There was no reply, and, with the formal ceremony over, his tone changed as he took command.
"I have good news. I have found a new land for us. A clean land with no smoke. A good land with no enemies, with much game, and with many, many petal plants that have never been picked. It is a long distance away in the hard direction, and the trail will be harsh and difficult. But we will go. For a new god star and his heaven, Bright's heaven, waits for us."
For the next few turns, Blue Flo had everyone who was not out hunting meat busy in the fields, picking the edible pods and storing them in the pod bin. He was outside the bin with Greatcrack, looking with satisfaction at the pods spilling out of the opening. "It is enough," he said. "We will leave when the hunters return."
"But is it enough?" Greatcrack wondered. "We needed to eat many, many pods to get from Bright's Heaven back to the clan. There are many in the clan, and they will travel much more slowly than a hunting party."
"There are many, many pods, Greatcrack. There must be enough there to feed all the clan, for I have never seen so many pods before." Blue Flo went off to greet a returning hunting party. Greatcrack stared at the flowing pile of pods.
"There are many pods," she thought. "But are there enough?"
She played internally with her pouch full of cluster-shaped seeds, which she had retrieved after the battle, and thought back over the many pods she herself had eaten while crossing the barren land between here and Bright's Heaven. Many pods would be needed, for she had taken the cluster-shaped seed from each one as she had eaten it, and there were many, many of those seeds in her storage pouch. Then, in a flash of inspiration, one of the greatest mathematical minds ever hatched in the past or future history of the Chila made a great leap of abstract thought.
"I took one seed from every pot that I ate," Greatcrack said to herself. "So I have as many seeds as pods."
Her mind faltered for a moment.
"But seeds are not pods."
It recovered.
"But there are as many seeds as there were pods, so the number is the same."
She laid the seeds out in a row that stretched all along the wall of the pod bin. There were many of them. She then took out pods and put one next to each seed until she had a row of pods.
"There," she said. "I will need that many pods to get to Bright's Heaven."
She put the pods to one side in a pile. She took out more pods and laid them next to the seeds until she had another row of pods.
"Blue Flo will need these pods to travel to Bright's Heaven," she said,
as she gathered the pods up again and put them in another pile. Greatcrack soon had pile after pile of pods stacked inside and outside the pod bin as she set aside rations for each of the clan members. She was only halfway through the names of the clan members when she ran out of pods.
There was not enough food.
Greatcrack hurried off and brought Blue Flo back to the pod bin to explain what she had done. She got nowhere. "Yes, I see the piles of pods, but how do you know that each person will need that many?"
Yes, I see that when you line up the pods next to the seeds, that the line of pods is as long as the line of seeds. But what do seeds have to do with pods? Yes, I understand that you saved one seed from each pod as you ate it on the way back from Bright's Heaven. But what does that have to do with feeding the clan? You ate all those pods, and there is nothing left but these deformed seeds. No, I don't understand what you mean when you say that the seeds tell you how many pods each one of us will need. Seeds are not pods. Great Crack tried in many ways to get Blue Flow to make the jump in abstract thought that now came so naturally to her. But he could not do it. Finally, in frustration, he lost his temper and stamped, "There are plenty of pods. Look at them all. We will go now, for Bright's Heaven is waiting." Great Crack flowed to block his way.
"We cannot go," she said. "We will starve before we get there. The seeds tell the truth."
"Seeds are not pods," he retorted. "And I have been meaning to trump you for keeping those seeds after I told you to leave them on the trail." Her reply brought him up short.
"Who is leader of the clan, old one?"
She moved toward him while he backed out of the pod bin. No use endangering the pods, he thought. We are both in good shape, and this is going to be a long fight. I wonder why she is challenging me now. The clan gathered around them as they moved together into a clear place between the stockades. Blue Flow watched with a combination of fear and amusement as his opponent emptied her pouches of tools and trinkets, formed a dueling manipulator, and raised her spear.
Blue Flow is in good shape,
Great Crack thought as she made a neat pile of her precious, unusual things.
I will need every advantage I can get to beat him. However, he must not be allowed to win, for he will lead the clan into sure starvation.
She finally turned, raised her spear, and repeated her challenge.
Who is leader of the clan, old one?
She paused, then punctuated the challenge by ejecting her half-formed egg sac from the protection of her body onto the crust between them. The clan looked in shock at the precious, tiny eggling wriggling out the last of its life among the glowing remains of its ruptured egg sac. Blue Flow alternated his horrified eyes between the cooling eggling and the stern visage of Great Crack.
She is really determined to win. Could it be that she is right, and there are not enough pods?
He shifted his spear. No matter. Things have gone too far to stop now. Blue Flow returned the formal reply.
I am, hatchling.
He lunged at her. It was not a pretty fight. Both were encumbered by the rule that they had to maintain control of their spears to keep from automatically losing, but were not allowed to use the points for cutting until the final ceremonial slash of the loser by the winner. They wallowed, struck at each other's eye stubs with the sides of their spears, trod one another's edges, tried to wrest the spear from the other's grasp, and slapped each other with muscular pseudopods in an attempt to deliver a knockout shock to the brain knot. The usually fluidless battle for leadership ended in a shocking way when Great Crack found Blue Flow's spear pointing in an opportune direction and deliberately impaled herself on it, taking it into her body. No longer in control of his spear, Blue Flow had lost. He shook the glowing gout of Great Crack's fluid off his dueling manipulator onto the crust as she repeated her challenge.
Who is leader of the clan, old one?
You are, Great Crack, Blue Flow replied. Great Crack maneuvered her body, and Blue Flow watched, horrified, as his sharp spear broke out of the rapidly healing wound in Great Crack's side. The spear reached over to his surface and gave him the ceremonial cut, the fluids from the two bodies mixing together as they dripped off the spear point onto the crust. Although she had suffered a significant wound, the injury would only slow an excellent fighter like Great Crack, and when she repeated the challenge, no one had the courage to reply. Great Crack then told the gathered clan,
"We will go to Bright's Heaven, but not now. We do not have enough food to survive the trek across the Badlands between here and Bright's Heaven. We must grow more pods. Go back to the fields and plant many more seeds. We will go after the next harvest."
The clan turned to their work, their disappointment at the delay in reaching Bright's Heaven, countered by their natural reluctance to leave their home. Within a few turns, Great Crack had mended, and she spent the time making sure not only that the clan planted enough seeds, but that she wouldn't lose the services of Blue Flow, one of the best warriors of the clan. At every opportunity, she patted and teased him. In a few turns, he got over his sulk at losing, gave in to the teasing, and they enjoyed a romp together. Soon, she felt a new egg growing inside her to replace the one she had sacrificed. Great Crack planted a few of the funny cluster seeds in one spot and watched the plants with interest. But to her great disappointment, the plants, pods, and seeds inside were just like the plants grown from the oval seeds from Bright's Heaven. She could never figure out why. While the crops grew, Great Crack played with mathematics. In the same manner as she had learned to identify pods with seeds, she now had a collection of pebbles, one for each member of the clan. With the new crop coming in, a new pod bin had to be constructed. Great Crack decided that it was about time to check to see if there were enough pods for the clan. She did not look forward to hauling all those pods out of the bins, lining them up against the collection of seeds that she had accumulated on her trek back from Bright's Heaven, then putting them in stacks and back into the bins again. Then she made another conceptual breakthrough.
"Why do I have to move pods around?" she thought. "I can make a collection of seeds, one for each pod in the bin. Once that is done, then it is much easier to move seeds than pods."
Soon, the pod bin had a smaller bin outside the opening, containing a pile of seeds, one for each pod in the bin. Monitoring the bin was the Chila's first accountant, an old one assigned to the task of adding a seed to the seed bin for each pod put into the pod bin, and taking one seed out for every pod eaten. As the harvest proceeded, even the number of seeds grew to overflow their bin. Great Crack looked at the seed bin and was both pleased and appalled at the number. Now that she had learned to use her mathematics to make her job easy, she kept trying to think of other ways to make it even easier. She mused as she pushed the seeds around in stacks. She then noticed that since the seeds were long ovals, they had a tendency to form into clumps. She found that if she arranged them so that their sides just touched, they formed a pretty cluster. Although there were too many to count, there was always the same number if they were all pushed together so that all the sides just touched. It was a pretty pattern, just like the cluster pattern of the bottom seed of the pods from Bright's Heaven. She put one of the cluster seeds next to the collection of seeds. They looked identical. Then, the now familiar habit of isomorphic identification struck again.
"If a cluster seed looks like this small clump of seeds," she wondered, "why don't I just save a stack of cluster seeds
each one representing a whole clump of oval seeds. Soon, she had the seed bin replaced with a smaller one, containing a large number of cluster seeds and a few odd oval seeds left over. That bothered her a little, having some pods represented by cluster seeds and some by oval seeds, but it helped that the cluster seeds were a little bigger than the oval ones. Her real problem came with her accountant, who didn't understand at all.
"The old way was very simple, Great Crack," the old one said. "One seed in the seed bin for one pod in the pod bin. But this does not make sense. How can one seed, even a cluster seed, mean many pods?"
Great Crack tried hard to explain, and ran into the phenomenon that is often encountered by one trying to teach someone something. The teacher often learns something new herself. Great Crack learned to count past three.
"Now look, old one, I will go through it carefully. Here is one pod and one oval seed. Here is another pod next to the first pod, and another oval seed next to the first seed. That's two. And now, three."
Great Crack moved the third pod and seed into place, then reached for another set.
"Now this many is..."
Great Crack fumbled for the non-existent word.
"The same number of ways that you can travel. East, west, and the two hard directions."
She continued adding sets.
"And this many is the same as the number of fangs on a swift. And this many is the number of petals in a petal plant."
She went on.
"And this," she said, as she completed the pattern, "is the number of bumps on the cluster seed. It is as many as your eyes."
The accountant dipped each of his dozen eyes, one after the other, as he carefully touched each of the seeds in turn with a delicate tendril.
"So it is," he said. "That will make it easy to count them."
The lesson really didn't sink in the first time, but after many repetitions, even the accountant was using 1, 2, 3, travel, swift, pedal, all the way up to a dozen, as if he had learned it as a hatchling. But soon, even that did not suffice, for there were so many pods from the harvest that Great Crack had to invent the name Great for a dozen of pods. The accountant was very satisfied with her choice of word, for it obviously represented a great number of objects. With the accountant's help, Great Crack checked the results of the harvest. First, the pebbles, one for each member of the clan, were placed in a column. Then, across the bottom were placed cluster seeds. Only now, the unique collection of cluster seeds that Great Crack had accumulated during her trip back, and which measured the distance to Bright's Heaven in terms of pods, had been replaced by a concept, a number, a petal worth of cluster seeds, plus a swift of oval ones. The forecast was not good. As the cluster seeds grew out from each pebble, Great Crack came to the end of the seeds before she came to the last of the pebbles. Great Crack felt once again the frustration of being leader of the clan. The volcano had become more active, and the sky grew steadily worse. With their vision of the sky clouded, the crops grew poorly, and the harvests were meager. Their neighbors to the east and west were hungry and restless, and there had been many more attacks on the fields of the clan. They must go, but there were not enough pods. Great Crack stared at the diagram in front of her. Although the pebbles and seeds were far removed from hungry bodies and nourishing pods, they still foretold of great anguish for all.
I can strip the unripe pods from the plants before we leave, and they will get ripe enough to eat after a few turns, she thought. There are usually about 2 nearly ripe pods per plant.
She flowed over to her stockade, where she kept a pile of seeds that represented the number of plants in the fields. She soon returned with a collection of seeds that represented the unripe pods in the fields. But even when these were added to the diagram, they were not enough.
Dragon's fire, she swore to herself.
She shrank from making the obvious decision, arguing with herself.
But there are so many pods. Surely there are enough for all to go.
But the diagram, empty at the top and end, stared at her with its cold logic.
12 plus 2 of the aged ones will have to stay, she decided,
and winced as the numbers changed to names in her mind. She called the clan together. To solidify her control, as well as to signify her seriousness, she started with a formal challenge.
"Who is leader of the clan?" she asked.
And her tread felt and marked the chorus of replies.
"You are, Great Crack!"
Her eyes singled out and stared at a few warriors who were slow in responding. But soon, all had replied. She then said,
"We leave for Bright's Heaven at the next turn. But there are not enough pods to feed us all on the long journey, so some cannot go."
She reeled off the names of the aged ones, who were either too injured or too old to be of much value anymore, and they stoically accepted their fate, having grown weary of life after so many turns. It did not take long for the clan to strip the unripe pods from the plants and load up the eggs, hatchlings, pods, and their few tools and weapons into skin pouches tucked inside their bodies. The clan left their home, moving as always according to the rule of the ancient old aged ones. Go in a direction others do not go. The massive group of burdened Chela pushed slowly south. It was almost 2 turns before they could no longer see the stockades and fields that had once been their home. Shortly after they had gone over the horizon, one of the guards at the rear broke ranks, pushed his way ahead, and came up to Great Crack, who was part of the Pathbreaker chevron at the front.
"One of the aged old ones that we had left behind is following us," the guard whispered to her.
Great Crack left her place in the chevron, doing it carefully so that her replacement just in back of her could close the gap smoothly, thus preventing any loss in the progress she had made. She and the guard flowed quickly east and waited as the clan moved slowly by. Great Crack looked at the approaching aged one.
"It is West Light, one of the most able of those who were left. Why is he coming?"
They waited for almost a turn until the exhausted West Light approached them.
"You heard my command, aged one," she stamped at him. "You cannot come with us. There is not enough food. Go back now, or I will kill you instantly."
Westlight stopped and emptied out his pouches. He had been carrying some half-ripe pods from the fields that must have become edible since the trek had started, along with some nearly ripe wild pods.
"We were worried that perhaps there might not be enough food to keep the hatchlings healthy," Westlight said. "So we gathered what we could these past few turns, before you got too far away for me to reach. Here, take good care of the hatchlings."
Great Crack whispered,
"Thank you, Westlight."
She moved forward to pick up his meager offering. She then stared, as the thinnest Chela she had ever seen slowly pushed his way back to their now abandoned camp.
He has not eaten a thing since we left, she thought to herself.
She turned and went back to join the rest of the clan, still moving slowly southward towards Bright's Heaven.
The trek was dreary.
The progress was much slower than Great Crack had counted on, and she felt the pouch of seeds that represented the remaining food get smaller and smaller after every break. The quality of the food became worse as they ate all the ripe pods and started on the ones that had only partially ripened in their pouches. The littlest hatchlings didn't want to eat these and were constantly sick. Great Crack sent out hunting parties both east and west, but often they came back with neither pods nor meat. Great Crack grew desperate. They were losing a hatchling every few turns. For the first time in ages, some of the clan's eggs refused to hatch and had to be left after it became evident that the eggling inside was dead.
All the clan is in poor shape,
Great Crack said to herself as she worked in the rear, constantly closing gaps that a youngster or an old one had let fall into the body of the traveling group. She looked backward. There was a long, straggling column that had become separated from the rest of the group when one of the members faltered and allowed the hard direction to close in on him. She watched as he attempted to move forward again, but it was obvious that the speed he was able to make in the hard direction would not be fast enough to let him and his followers catch up with the rest of the clan. She then saw a movement off in the smoky east that sent her into action.
"Attack from east!" she stamped as she pushed her way through the crowded clan members.
When she got to the eastern edge, she saw it was serious. It was a large, hungry war party, and they had already cut off the straggling string from the rest of the clan. She soon had a group of warriors on either side of her, and noticed with satisfaction that the clan had stopped moving and were now in a coherent group, with the stronger ones facing outward, spears and shards bristling. She started forward to rescue the captives when her trained senses detected something from the west. It was another war party waiting for them to attack the first group when they could rush on them from the rear.
Stop!
She commanded. She led the war party back to protect the rest of the clan, then watched in agony as the captives were killed and the precious pods wrenched from their flowing bodies and devoured by the hungry band of marauders. The war party stayed for a few turns, trying to figure out a way to attack the rest of the clan. They made a few abortive attacks, one of which gave Great Crack deep satisfaction as she dispatched two of the enemy, partially to avenge the clan members she had lost. Finally, the war party gave up the siege and went off toward the west, hauling the meat from their victims with them. Great Crack immediately took the clan off again toward Bright's Heaven. With their enforced rest, the clan was in better shape, and with the example of what happened to stragglers still etched in their minds, there were very few times that the gap opened by the Pathbreakers was allowed to fail, and the clan made good time for a few turns. But it soon became obvious to Great Crack that they were in serious trouble. At the next break, she got out the pebbles that represented the members of the clan, and after discarding the ones that had been killed in the interchange with the attackers, she laid them out in a column. She knew that they were still far from Bright's Heaven, for they had just started to get to the Lost Feeling region. She made an estimate of how many turns it would take them to reach Bright's Heaven, and laid those cluster seeds out in a row. She then started to fill in the diagram with seeds representing the pods left. There was no question about it. They were short by many, many pods. She stared at the large empty space on the diagram, and her imaginative brain turned the empty space into empty Chila. It was now time. She would have to risk the chance of another attack and split her forces. The clan grew restless as the break grew longer while Great Crack calculated. She finally called her warriors together and explained the situation to them. Blue Flo had never really learned why the seeds and pebbles told things to Great Crack that he could not see. But he now was very glad that Great Crack had prevented him from leading the clan off many turns ago. With far fewer pods, he would have had them all dead by now. But he didn't need pebbles and seeds to tell him that there were not enough pods for them to make it to Bright's Heaven.
"Blue Flo," she said, "I want you to lead a hunting party to Bright's Heaven and bring back pods for us."
She looked down at the diagram and said,
"You will only need a slink's worth of pods to keep you going. You are going to arrive very hungry, but the ripe pods at the end of the journey will make it worthwhile."
Blue Flo and the others in the hunting party emptied out most of their pouches. Some of them attempted to leave without taking any pods, preferring to leave them for the hatchlings while making do with bravado. But Great Crack, trusting in her calculations, made them take their ration of pods. The hunting party took off and was rapidly out of sight of the slowly moving clan. With her warrior forces depleted, Great Crack took no chances and moved the clan along carefully so that no gaps developed and the perimeter always had warriors on the lookout both east and west. The hunting party quickly traveled over the lost-feeling region and soon saw the welcome sight of Bright peeking over the horizon. As they came into the region where the skies became clear and the petal plants flourished, they ate their fill and then started loading up their pouches in preparation for the long trek back to the hungry clan. Suddenly, Bad Turn whispered,
"I see a Flo Slow moving just over the horizon."
Blue Flo and the others soon confirmed the sighting, and they thinned their bodies to keep out of its sight.
"It is to the east, and we could get to it easily," Blue Flo whispered.
"The hatchlings have been without meat since we left home. Let's kill it."
The Flo Slow depended on its armored plates for protection. This one had never seen a Chela before and ignored them, as it ignored all small, scurrying creatures. The Flo Slow moved ponderously from plant to plant, its armored tread plates moving over its top surface to fall directly on the plant, crushing it to a pulp, to be ingested in the gaps between the plates as the huge body slowly flowed onward. The Flo Slow sought out plants, but as many an unfortunate Chela had found out, it would eat anything that happened to fall before its onslaught. The kill was easy, since the Flo Slow had never tasted a dragon crystal spear before. The Chela slipped in ahead of it, timing their moves carefully, and planted spears in the crust in just the correct position so that the sharp points entered the gaps between the plates as they came down to the surface. As they started to move away from the carcass, Bad Turn looked back at it and said,
"Too bad we can't carry that whole carcass back to the clan. If they had all that meat to eat, there would be no worry about food for the rest of the trip."
Blue Flo replied, "I thought about that too. We could try to push a large chunk of meat ahead of us, but we can carry in our pouches more than we can push, especially when we have to go in the hard direction. Besides, pushing the meat through the ashes over that whole distance will ruin it."
"If we only had some way to keep it out of the ashes," murmured Bad Turn.
And he went over to one of the large Flo Slow plates and looked at it. It was large, half as big as he was. It was a flat, square plate of material almost as hard as dragon crystal. At the front and back edges were curved lips that had been attached to the skin of the Flo Slow. Bad Turn flowed onto the plate, thinking,
This could hold a lot of meat and pods, much more than I could carry in my pouches.
He flowed to the front lip and stayed there for a moment, his back edge hanging back on the front lip of the plate.
"What are you doing?" Blowflo asked. "We should be going."
"Watch," said Bad Turn.
And Blowflo and the others saw his back edge stiffen as he grew a long internal manipulator crystal that ran from one end of the flow's slow plate to the other. Since the crystal was horizontal and did not have to fight the pull of egg, he could make it very thin. Thin enough just to fit under the lip of the plate.
"I never heard of growing a manipulator bone that way," one of the party said to Blowflo.
Then they both watched as Bad Turn moved away, the front of his body digging into the crust and the back edge dragging the plate along behind, firmly attached by the strong crystal bar just under the skin and stretching from one eye to another.
"It feels funny, but it works," Bad Turn said. "Once I get it moving, it is easy to keep it moving despite its weight. With someone behind pushing, I think we could pull much more than we could carry."
The others tried it, and they were all quick converts, especially when they tried it with a huge pile of bulky chunks of meat that could never be crammed into pouches. Within less than a turn, the flow's slow had been converted into meat piled on top of its own armored plates. The hunting party then moved off in single file, a pathbreaker leading the way, pushing into the hard direction, followed by a plate puller crouched up behind him hauling a plate of meat and helped along by a pusher and followed by three other teams. The meat on the plate seemed to work as well as their bodies at keeping the gap open in the hard direction, so they made good time. Their rest breaks were few and short, and only for downing another chunk of nourishing meat. When Great Crack observed them coming over the horizon, she saw them at a great distance. Many turns ago, she had stopped the trek to conserve food, while she kept watch with an eye perched up on a long eye stub. There were no longer any pods for anyone except the hatchlings, and they were doing poorly on those. The whole clan was gathered in a circle, too weak to move much, and Great Crack herself was forced to lower her eye stub often.
"Fine leader you turned out to be," she berated herself, "leading your clan off to die beneath smoky skies, in a place where they always feel lost."
Still, she had faith that Blowflo would return shortly with pods, and that then they could move again, while Blowflo returned for more. She was relieved when she saw the returning column, but was amazed by the bulk and length of it. Only the obvious shape of Blowflo breaking path at the front of the column relieved her worry that it was another attacking war party. The clan watched in awe as the procession pulled their wonderful-looking cargo into camp. Within two turns, everyone was back to a good, comfortable bulk. The hatchlings were soon feeling good enough to make pests of themselves, while the adults were more interested in pairing off and having a little fun alone. Great Crack listened in admiration as Blowflo recounted their journey, the kill of the Flow Slow, and the results of Bad Turn's invention.
"Bad Turn," Great Crack said, "for too long you have been stuck with that dreary hatchling name. From now on, you shall be Plate Puller." "Come with me," she commanded, and some of her eyes turned to look back at Blowflo as they left. "I will see you later. This new name calls for a reward."
Blowflo watched the couple go off, a little jealous. But he would have his chance later this turn. With their strength renewed by the meat and ripe pods, the clan moved off at good speed. It was not long before they began to feel less lost. The sky cleared,
and finally Great Crack called a halt and arranged the clan so that all, even the smallest hatchling, could see the intense reddish-yellow glow of bright on the horizon.
"O great bright one, brightest of all in the sky,"
Great Crack intoned, all of her dozen eyes staring at the bright star, while her undertread rhythmically pulsed the crust.
"We thank you for saving us from the rolling walls of blue-white fire. We thank you for saving us from the choking clouds of poisonous red smoke that kill the plants and still the eggs. We thank you for leading us out of the land of starvation and lostness to your heaven."
Her eyes turned from the star and looked around at the clan.
"Let us go now to claim our reward. A heaven where there are no enemies and plenty of food and game. Come, all of you, into Bright's heaven."
Time, 21:54 and 20 seconds, GMT. Tuesday, 14 June, 2050. The strong limbs of Commander Carol Swenson pulled her compact body slowly along the central shaft of St. George, her long yellow braid flipping from side to side with the motion. Carol's eyes automatically monitored the traffic and the side corridors, watching the to-and-fro motion of the humanity on her tiny planet. Although many of the crew were still busy with their normal tasks, there was a general flow toward the viewing ports near the bridge. However, Carol was headed in another direction, toward the Port Science Blister. The view of the upcoming action would not be as good there, but she wanted to see the close-ups from the cameras on the probe spacecraft. She swung into a corridor, and with a dexterity born of many years in freefall, launched her body unerringly toward the hatch at the far end. Bouncing to a halt on the wall next to the hatch, she palmed the lock and floated in. No one saw her enter, for Pierre had his science crew busy.
"How much longer?"
she asked the group, gathered in front of consoles on the other end of the room. Pierre glanced at the flickering numbers on the right of his screen.
14 minutes, and everything looks fine."
Carol looked at a display across the room. The field of view of the monitor camera contained the glowing sphere of one of the larger condensed asteroids in the lower corner, and a small white speck representing the other large asteroid in the upper corner. As she watched, the smaller speck moved slowly across the screen, getting brighter as it came. Carol looked at another console. The picture there was almost the same, but reversed. The geometry of the elastic collision of the two large, ultra-dense asteroids was almost exactly symmetric. Pierre stared at his console. There were no pictures on his screen, just a computer-generated plot of two curved lines that were slowly approaching each other in a collision course. Numbers in boxes along the side of his screen changed rapidly.
30 seconds to last abort point," he announced. "Any problems?"
Jean spoke from another console.
"Video monitors operating?"
"Computer control well within margins," another voice said.
"Herder probe propulsion units all operational," said another.
"I'll let it go then," Pierre said, lifting his finger from the abort toggle and snapping shut the safety cover. Carol watched one of the screens as the smaller blob grew larger and larger. Angry tongues of fire burst rapidly in seemingly random directions from positions near the two spheres, as the computer directed the Herder probes to keep the asteroids on their correct paths. Then, suddenly, in a sequence that was too fast to follow, an ultra-dense asteroid flashed around between its twin and the camera probe, and the screen was empty. Pierre flicked on another camera that was off at a different angle. But that view was only good for a few seconds before the rapidly shrinking spot faded. faded from the screen. They all turned to Pierre's screen, which showed the orbits of the two asteroids. The trajectories had approached so close to each other that the tight curlicues in their respective paths, due to their mutual gravitational attraction, seemed to be placed one on top of the other. They now watched as one line headed outward toward the asteroid belt again, while the other seemed to be dropping straight into the neutron star. Actually, the falling massive asteroid would miss the star by a slight margin and was now in a highly elliptical orbit, with its aphelion near the 100,000-kilometer circular orbit of St. George and its perihelion at just over 400 kilometers from Dragon's Egg. Their elevator was in place. God. Time, 22:12:30 GMT, Tuesday, 14 June, 2050. God came to the Chila slowly. For many, many, many generations, the Chila had no God. The sky was empty, except for a few tiny pinpricks of light scattered across the cold, black dome. Then, God had become lonely and made the great volcano grow, driving the Chila from their home in the north to a new home in the south. There, the god Bright had welcomed his chosen people into the heaven he had prepared for them. Bright had been good to the Chila. Bright never rose or set like the other spots of light, but stayed up in the sky, keeping watch over all the Chila. Life was good, and the Chila let Bright know that they were happy by their prayers that they faithfully gave every turn of Bright's throne. Then, one turn, when the eyes of the Chila were lifted to the skies in prayer, one of the supplicants saw a new speck rise over the horizon. As soon as the prayers were finished, he brought it to the attention of the Holy Ones that interpreted Bright's wishes. The Holy Ones were puzzled, but did not let it show. As masters of their profession, they had learned to say little and do even less until they were sure of themselves.
"Yes, we expected something like that, but let us wait and we will study it further," they reassured the excited discoverer.
They did study it. It was still a speck in the sky, not much different from all the other specks, but it soon became brighter than any of the others. Fortunately, it was not nearly as brilliant as the god Bright, as it would have been difficult to explain two gods to a people that had been brought up to believe in the omnipotence and uniqueness of the one god, Bright. The new speck grew and grew in brilliance with each passing turn, and although the common Chila noticed the increase in brightness, it was only the Holy Ones who noticed that the speck was also slowly moving with respect to the other stars in the sky. A moving star! This was unheard of in Chila astrology, with a pattern of lights, dominated by the glaring red-yellow presence of Bright, had always remained fixed in relative position, while rotating slowly about Bright's throne in the sky. If the stars are not fixed but move around, how can one make any kind of predictions from them? The future would be constantly changing, complained Bright II, the chief astrologer and next in line for the position of high priest.